Last week we talked about the white horse, the horsemen, the four horsemen of what we call the apocalypse, a very famous phrase, four horsemen. People use it all the time. And I think at one point they were called the four horsemen of Notre Dame. They had a bunch of famous runners. They were called the four horsemen because they could run and conquer, you know, other teams. But we read this last time, Revelation chapter 6 and verse 1, that I saw when the Lamb broke one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures say as with a voice of thunder, come. I looked, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow. So here's an archer with a bow. And a crown was given to him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer. Now, we saw last time a crown was given. So a crown was like you are crowned some kind of a ruler. A crown was given to him. He didn't earn it necessarily. It was given to him. And the word crown here is that from the Greek word Stephanos, Stephanos, but we would pronounce it in the English Steph or Stephanos. I named my son Stephen because he was, we thought he was a wonderful crown. The crown of old men is their grandchildren. It's the same word used here in the book of 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25. It says, everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable crown, wreath. That Stephanos meant a wreath, a circular wreath like this. It was given to the victor. It was a crown or a chaplet or a circlet. It was made of foliage, designed to resemble foliage and worn by high status people held in high esteem, or for people who won. If you were a winner of an Olympic game or something, they gave you that crown, that wreath. What they did with Jesus is to take a group of thorns and form them into that same kind of crown and put it on his head. This was done to mock him and to make fun of him because he was called, some people thought, King of the Jews. Yeah, oh, here's your crown, a crown of thorns causing his head to bleed and hurting him. Paul writes in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, in the future there is laid up for me the crown, the Stephanos of righteousness, the Stephanos of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Okay, so you got this crown. You have this wreath. He went forth conquering. The word conquering is the same word that is used, that Jesus uses in John wrote it, but it's quoting from Jesus. He who conquers, and it's translated in many places, overcome. Whosoever overcomes, he will gain this. He will gain, I'll grant him to sit on my throne. I'll grant him a new white stone, a new name, and so on. All these things that come to the conqueror. Now, over the years, The white horse has been the most mysterious of all. R.H. Charles, the famous famous researcher, wrote in the 1920s, he did a commentary called the International Critical Commentary. In his commentary, he connected the four horsemen to Jesus' Mount Olivet prophecy, where Jesus said, you know, there will be, what shall be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And Jesus said, number one, be sure that no one deceives you. And then there will be wars and rumors of wars, and then there will be famines, and then there'll be earthquakes, and then there'll be lots of death. So he connected it like that, that there will be all these things from the Mount Olivet prophecy. And so he said that, and I know churches, and at one time I think I believed that, but you know, it's hard to know which. I'm not telling you which one to believe. I'm just going to tell you there are a lot of different ideas. And so he connected it with the white horse were the people who pretended they were good ministers, but they were false ministers, and they went forth to sow falsity. There were many, many theories about it. Others believed that the white horse was the whole Christianity, the Church of Christianity, and that white horse went conquering and to conquer, and that it actually conquered the Roman Empire. Instead of being destroyed, the Christianity actually became one of the most prominent parts of the Roman Empire. And especially after the conversion of Emperor Constantine, who made Christianity on par or even preferred religion to others in the Roman Empire. So that was another theory. There are many theories of what this white horse was. Let me give you just a little bit of some history. During John's time, we don't often think of this place, but there was a territory called Parthia, and Parthians had the most famous mounted archers that there were in that time. Rome wanted to conquer Parthia. They tried, and the famous archers from the horsemen, the mounted archers, drove them back. Rome attacked Parthia in 53 BC. Now we're going back to 53 BC. This is before Jesus' time, as Rome was wanting to expand and become the world ruler and so on. They wanted Parthia. They went in and invaded. They were driven back. They did it again in 36 BC, coming this way now toward our modern time, and they were once again driven back. They did it again in 62 AD. Now, this is the time of Paul and so on, and some of the other apostles may have been dead by this time or hurt or scattered, but 62 AD, and in some of the cases, the Parthians not only drove Rome back, but they inflicted such devastation on the Roman army that it was humiliating. It was embarrassing to them. Rome sending their powerful army and once again being driven back, and they tried it all the way up into the 200s AD. Never could conquer Parthia, never could do it. But it ended, I think the battle of 62 AD ended the Roman expansion. They decided, forget it. We're just going to keep Rome where we are. Now, what that did to the people of John's time, you know, we're looking at the people who were, where Revelation was being written and all that. You know, you had the security of Pax Romana. It was the Roman peace. As long as you're a Roman citizen, you're within the Roman Empire, you have peace. Nobody can conquer us. We are invincible. We are the greatest nation on earth, and there is nothing like us. But this nagging thing of the Parthians always was unsettling. Are we really as strong, or is there some power out there that could? Now, during this time, you have all these barbarian tribes that are going up against it. Rome is decaying from within. They're losing their power. They're having their orgies and they're vomiting places where they can just eat till they're crazy and sick and tired and. They are immoral, and you know they've let themselves go down the drain and degradation, and So are they invincible? Or did this white horse imply that they were, he was sent out conquering, and he was going to overcome and overcome? Is it that we're not so great as we thought we were? That it represents a threat to security that comes from outside our borders? You know, the churches of Laodicea and Sardis seemed content to bask in the protection of Rome. Laodicea, we have no need of anything. We are rich and increased with goods. And boy, Rome could provide a lot of goods. Now, if the Babylon that you see in the book of chapter 18, if that's his Rome, and you know, it is a power. It talks about all the things that people had. They had this, they had that, they had, you know, all these grains and stuff. Could they bask in the protection of Rome? And many of the Christians were seduced into, well, I just want to be a part of the society, Roman society, and they were seduced into wanting to be a part of that society. For instance, Pergamos and Thyatira were willing to compromise their convictions. Let's read Revelation chapter 2, verse 14. This is for the church at Pergamum, I believe. I have a few things against you, because you have some who hold the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit acts of immorality. It's translated fornication, which means all kinds of sexual sins. So were they wanting, okay, you know, there was Paul makes a huge argument, starting in First Corinthians chapter 8. He goes all the way through chapter 10 before he concludes that argument. He goes through, well, you know, I know that you people in Corinth, you know that there is no idol, no such thing. These are not gods. These idols are not gods. They're not. And so the Corinthians were saying, well, why can't we just go and enjoy? They're going to have a big party. They're going to have a feast. They're going to sacrifice this food, this ox, this sheep and so on for their gods. Well, why can't we just eat of it? You know, it's nice, clean meat, but it's just, you know, why can't we just eat it? And so Paul said, well, I know, you know, and I know that you know that the idol is nothing, and that which is offered to the idol is nothing. And then he goes back and forth, and he talks about it this way, then he talks about it that way. But by 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he says, he finally concludes, I know that it's nothing, but the things they sacrifice to demons. And I don't want you eating what is sacrificed to demons. I wouldn't want you participating of the table of demons and also wanting to come and participate in the table of the Lord, which is, you know, the Passover. Also in Revelation chapter 2, verse 20, this is Thyatira. I have this against you that you tolerate the woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, and she teaches and leads my bondservants astray so that they commit acts of immorality and eat things sacrificed to idols. That was not good, eating things sacrificed to idols. So in order to, you know, there's this old phrase, we have to go along to get along. We have to go along. So many of the Christians, you know, they're inside Rome. They're, you know, what do we do? How do we conduct ourselves? Do we want to be really oddballs? Do we really want to be different from the other people? Do we really want to have a different idea and so on? Or should we just go ahead because the idol is nothing? So many Christians felt, as long as we have peace at home, many Christians were willing to even accept the death of their martyrs, like Antipas in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 13. He says this, he writes, I know where you dwell, where Satan's throne is, and you hold fast my name and have not denied my faith, even in the days of Antipas, my witness, my faithful one, who was killed among you where Satan dwells. Remember, Stephen was killed early on. You know, and churches can get to where they think, okay, I want to get along, so I'll go along with whatever the society says, and I'll make compromises, because after all, we're protected. We're living in the greatest country there was, and why should I jeopardize my status, okay? So you have these situations where people can just bask in the luxury, but the first horse, that first horse is saying, wait a second, are we as secure in our country in Rome as we thought we were? And wouldn't you think the same thing? Don't many nations feel they're secure, their people are secure, you don't have to worry, no one could invade us. Every one of them thinks that I've got the strongest nation. I'm sure China thinks they're the strongest nation. You know, the United States thinks it's the strongest nation. Russia probably thinks it's the strongest nation. It's going to invade Ukraine. Ukraine can't invade it. The common market or the NATO nations think they're the strongest, and they're not going to tolerate it. So people can adjust, okay? People can adjust to martyrdom and people being killed or persecuted by the state as long as they're doing well, okay? We got plenty of food, don't we? We got plenty of this. We got plenty of this. Look at it in Revelation 18, what the merchants say when Babylon the Great goes down. Babylon, okay? Here it is. Revelation 18, verses 11 through 13. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their cargoes anymore. Cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones. By the way, do you ever hear these advertisements? People want you to buy gold from this company, buy gold from that company, buy gold from this company. This company's selling. I have confidence in this company. This company's going, and boy, buy gold to protect yourself because the dollar is not going to be strong. Well, what are you using to buy that gold with? You're using a dollar that's not going to be strong, and that company's willing to sell you their gold. I always wondered, why are they so willing to sell it if it's so valuable and it's so great and so wonderful to have it? Why don't they just keep it? Why do they want this old dollar that's going? I just never could reconcile that. So here, what do they have? Cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen. We always want good clothing and purple and silk and scarlet. And every kind of citron wood, and every article of ivory, and every article made from very costly wood, and bronze, and iron, and marble, and cinnamon, and spice, and incense, and perfume, and frankincense, and wine, and olive oil, and fine flour, and wheat, and cattle. Oh, yeah, we got plenty of food. We got meat. We got the spices and sheep. We got lamb, you know, chops, and cargoes of horses. We got other things and chariots. Oh, man, you talk about abundance and slaves and human lives. We even have human lives that we use. So, in Romans, in Revelation 2, verse 10, what does he say? Do not fear what you are about to suffer. This is Pergamum, I guess. Because the devil is about to cast some of you into prison so that you would be tested and you will have tribulation for days. Be faithful unto death and I will give you a crown of life. God is saying to his churches, you need to be faithful right to the point of death and don't compromise your standards. Here's a warning from Revelation chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. To the angel of the church of Sardis write, He who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars says this, I know your deeds, that you have a name that you are alive, but you are dead. Wake up and strengthen the things that remain, which were about to die, for I have not found your deeds completed in the sight of God. You need to wake up. They're just basking in the deadness of, okay, everything's fine. We've got prosperity. We've got gold. We've got silver. We've got all this food, the wheat, the barley, the cattle, the fine flour, the olive oil. We've got we've got our transportation. We've got the cargoes. We've got the horses. We've got the chariots. We've got all the slaves that we need to do things for us. Yes. So now Revelation, the book of Revelation does not attempt to explain any of the origins of sin, okay, or evil, but you can see in the book of Revelation God's displeasure with evil. He does not like it at all, and there are consequences to this evil. And I want you to notice one thing about each horse as we go, okay? But first, let me give you this introduction here. Isaiah 45. So we have a kind of a, where does this evil come from? But look at this. Look at Isaiah 45, verses 6 and 7. That men may know from the rising to the setting of the sun that there is no one beside me. I am the ever-living. I am the eternal, the YHWH. Those are the four Hebrew letters here in your Bible, in the Hebrew. I am the YHWH, and there is no other. I am the one forming light and creating darkness. So there's light. He creates the light. He creates the darkness. Causing well-being. Everything to be going really well. And creating calamity. And the King James says evil. It means things that are not good. Calamity, troubles, problems. I am the eternal who does these things. So where does all this happen? Okay, so in the white horse, I'm not sure what it is. Okay, some people think it's the deception that went all over. Some people think it's Christianity that conquered the Roman Empire. Some people think it's the threat from the outside of the, like Parthia was, which showed the weakness of the Roman government, and that they're not able to protect their citizens as much as people. People are basking in, oh yes, we no one can do anything. We got the strongest military, we got the strongest army, we got the strongest this, but they were defeated. They were defeated by the Parthians and driven back. Now the Parthians did not try to conquer Rome. They just defended themselves. You're not conquering us, pal, you know. Stay on your own place. And a lot of people don't even know that history, or you probably haven't thought much about Parthia. Let's go to the red horse. The red horse is fairly obvious, but we didn't read it well. We tied that, R.H. Charles tied it, and so did a church I know, and I used to do it myself, tied it to the statement by Jesus, there will be wars and rumors of wars. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. So we said that represents the red horse. But let's take a look. Let's read this part of the red horse. This is Revelation chapter 6, verses 3 and 4. And he broke the second seal. Now, who is he? That's Jesus. That's our Lord, Jesus Christ. Is the only one, the lamb that was worthy to open the seals, he breaks the seal, okay? He breaks the seal. Then I heard a second living creature say, Now, you have the living creatures coming around the throne, right? The four living creatures, they are there. And the living creature says, yells with the sound of thunder to the white horse, come. Okay? Now, who's responsible for this happening? Well, God is. The lamb opens, he releases the seal. The creature then tells whatever that's coming, get out here. You know, it's almost like, if you've ever been to a rodeo and they got you ready, you're ready, or you're on your horse, you're ready, and there's you're on a bucking bronco or something, and they have the thing, and then they give you the sign, okay, boom, they blow the horn, okay, then you release the gate, and then that bull or that horse runs out into the arena. And so the living creature says, come, and here they come. And then verse 4, and another, that is a red horse, went out. And to him who sat on it, whatever the rider was, it was granted. You now have the power. We're going to grant you to take peace from the earth. You say, okay, well, if they take peace, that means war. So that's the thing. This, the red horse means war. Wait a second. It means more than war. To take peace from the earth. And listen to the next phrase. And that men would slay one another. And a great sword was given to him. Now, what if this meant that, now, what did Jesus say about peace? I have not come to bring peace on the earth, but a sword, to turn one person against the other, and they will, and a mother-in-law will hurt the daughter-in-law, the son-in-law will hurt and person's foes will be those of his own family. In other words, this has to do with internal peace. Internal societal violence. Men will slay one another. Crime will rise. It will not be secure. The society will start having insecurities. Right now, I don't know if you know, in the United States, I just saw the news the other day that people are leaving New York City because there's so much crime. And that the people who are supposed to prosecute crime are not doing it. So they were given, granted, to take peace. Not that you can't live in peace. And by the way, when you can't live in peace, you're always anxious, you're always worried, you're insecure. People need security. People need to feel safe. That's one of the basic factors of living. We have to feel safe. And then, and so they were taking peace, and that men would slay one another, and a great sword was given him. The red horse gets out there with authority, a great sword, to take peace from the earth and to incite men, humans, to slay one another. Men could be humans, okay? So there'd be lots of crime, lots of murder, lots of troubles, that the people couldn't feel safe in their own area. Now, you could say that means war and rumors of war. It could be. I'm not telling you which one it is. I'm giving you alternatives. But read it carefully, okay? He was granted to take peace from the earth. Jesus said, I didn't come to bring peace. And so many times there are people turned against you in your own family. People won't speak to you. And that men would slay one another. Societal violence. Murders. Now let's take a look at the black horse. The next one is the black horse. People say, well, I know what that is. That's famine. Well, let's read it again. What is this? Revelation 6, beginning in verse 5. When he broke the third seal, who is he? The Lamb. That's Jesus. I heard the third living creature say. Now, in each case, Jesus, the Lamb, breaks the seal. And in each case, one of these living creatures around the throne of God says, it's your turn. Come. Come on out. Come on out. And I looked, and behold, a black horse. And he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. He didn't have a sword. He had a scale. And I heard something like a voice in the center of the four living creatures. Now, in the four living creatures is a voice that John hears coming out from that throne of God, the four living creatures, saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not damage the oil and the wine. Now, I used to think this meant famine. You know, you based on R.H. Charles's interpretation that Matthew chapter 24, Jesus talks about there will be wars, rumors of wars, famines. And so we say, oh, well, the next horse then will be famine. After the red horse, wars and rumors, then the next horse will be famines. Well, this is not a famine. This is not no food. This is an economic problem. Let's read this very carefully. The living creatures are saying a quart of wheat for a denarius. Now, a quart of wheat, a quart, was probably what most people ate in a day. If you had nothing to eat but the wheat, you would eat that quart in a day. For a denarius, what was a denarius? A denarius was a day's wages. Now listen to the inflationary situation here. A day's wages got you 1 day's meal. How are you going to pay for your other things? How are you going to pay for your shoes and your clothing and your other things? You can't buy milk. You can't buy other. You got your whole day's wages for a quart of wheat or for 3 quarts of barley. Wheat was denser. Wheat was, you know, you could do more with wheat. But you get 3 quarts of barley for a denarius. The same. All day's wages bought me 3 quarts of barley. That's it. How are you going to pay your rent if you had rent? Maybe you own your own home. That's fine. But you can see this is inflationary problems. This is an economic problem, not a famine problem. It's not that there is no food, which is famine. It's that it's expensive food. Whatever here is expensive. And then they say, don't damage the oil and the wine. Don't damage it. You've got to be very careful with everything because there's not much of it, and it's very high priced. So it's an economic inflationary difficulty. Food is available, but at a high price. Okay? It takes a day's wages to buy a meal, or at least the meal for the day, the meals for the day. You and I today, we probably have an excessive amount of money beyond the food we eat in a day. Although I see now more and more people, because of economic situations, are buying fast food, trying to keep the price they spend on food down. They're having a difficulty now with this. And then chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. Let's take a look at the last horse. Revelation 6, verse 7. When the Lamb broke the fourth seal, it tells you right here, the Lamb, he is the Lamb. The Lamb broke the fourth seal. I heard the voice of the fourth living creature. And these voices like thunder. Pulls the seal out. Come, you get this. And I looked. So this is God sending this. This is God doing this. I looked and behold an ashen horse. Now the word ashen comes from the Greek word chloros. C-H-L-O-R-O-S. We get a word in our English language called chlorophyll. When what people want to describe what was in these green plants, there was a There was a fat soluble thing in these green plants called chlorophyll. We discovered this many years ago now. It's when I was a kid, they discovered it in the 1940s, 50s, chlorophyll. It was pale green. In this word chloros meant pale green, sickly looking. And he who sat on it had the name death. We thought it was disease epidemics, okay? We don't know. I'm just reading what it says. He had the name death. And Hades, the Greek word for the grave, it's a counterpart of the word in the Bible of Sheol. It's a counterpart of Sheol. And Hades followed death and was following him. Authority was given to them to over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword. So this is a death from all causes, mainly with the sword and with famine and with disease and by wild beasts of the earth. So this one represents sword, famine, and disease. So all the causes of death. And he's coming to take one fourth of the earth. Now, brethren, if he killed one fourth of the earth today, if one fourth of the population of the earth, you know, we have about, 9 billion, something like that. If you had one fourth of it, it would almost be, 2.8, 2.5, something like that. A billion people would die. Or if we had 8 billion on earth, it'd be about 1.8 billion. Okay, death from any and all causes. Okay, let's take a look at Isaiah chapter 5, goes along with talking about Sheol and the grave. Therefore, Sheol has enlarged its throat, opened its mouth without measure, and Jerusalem's splendor, her multitude, her din of revelry, and the jubilant within her descend into it. Now they're all laughing, all happy, they're all in revelry and in having a great party and all that. But the Sheol opens her mouth, the grave, the death opens, and everybody's going down into it. So the common man will be humbled, and the man of importance abased. The eyes of the proud also will be abased, but the Eternal of Hosts will be exalted in judgment, and the Holy One will show himself holy in righteousness. So here comes this fourth chloros color horse, and the name on that horse, the name had, you don't see a rider on this horse in particularly. It says, the fourth horse coming, and it's ashen. This horse is ashen, and he who sat on it had a name death. Oh yeah, he did have somebody on it, and the name on this horse, the rider was, his name was death, and then Hades followed him. As death goes, the grave is swallowing them up. That's the fourth horse. So we have all these symbols. There are other, I want to tell you that there are people who don't know what these mean. They don't know how to apply them. We're all looking for signs. People are looking for signs, thinking this leads up to the very coming of Christ. If we could just see all these famines and pestilence and things coming, that would be the coming. But these are punishments in a way. God is inflicting something. Come, he says. The seal is opened, and people are going to be hurt. At least that's the picture here of these four horsemen. They may be insecurity at home, violence and internal troubles, inflation and internal troubles. I don't know. I don't know what I'm just telling you. These what these horses mean. There's not total famine here, but the high-priced food. And that the last horse is death from all causes, from pestilence, from famine, from the sword, from wild beasts, from everything. And as death goes through, the grave opens its mouth. That's the picture we have. We'll talk more about the book of Revelation and these four horsemen next week. Join me as we end our services today. We'll end with prayer. Almighty God, our Father in heaven, we come before you knowing you are love for us. You love your people. We know that you are looking out for them, that you watch over them day and night. They cry to you, Father. We ask you to open your ears to hear all their prayers, which we know you do, and through Jesus Christ to grant them the blessings, the peace in their hearts and the peace in their minds. In spite of pain and suffering in their bodies, grant them peace. Grant them healing. Whatever your will is, grant them healing. Grant them mercy. Grant them your love and comfort. You are the only one exalted, and you will attend to the violence and the evils of this world in your own way, in your own time. And we see this picture in the book of Revelation, that no one will be exalted in that day, only you. We exalt you today in our hearts and our minds as the very Lord and Creator of all things. We exalt you as our God, whom we worship, and we don't compromise you, your name, your way, your truth. We stay with the Bible truths. We give you thanks for everything now, and we just praise your name for being who you are, and praise Jesus with all the power, because the Lamb has been exalted, and his power came from his very sacrifice. We give you thanks now for everything in his name. Amen.